the teacher, you know. Okay, Albert, welcome to whatever this is gonna turn into.
Thank you.
Great start, right? You were talking about last night's storytelling, and you were sharing how you shared the story.
Yeah.
In a new format, or is that
what? Yeah, my performance, I try to do something that I would tell one story in the beginning, that would have sort of like a build up for my story that I will tell at the end of the show. So I start the evening, and I also think it's quite good to start the evening with just even a short story. Mm-hmm. Gets the people a bit more comfortable, they understand what's going to happen, and then the show can continue. So I was telling the origin myth of prison gangs in South Africa. And it's a fascinating story about how these gangs started, and this is what new gangsters are told, basically, with the initiation and everything. That's the real sort of origin myth of it. Of course, you can see a lot of holes in it, and it's probably not true, but it's fascinating that that story exists. And just a little bit of background about the prison gangs in South Africa. Yeah. And then, of course, later on, I talked about how I was arrested once and, had to fear what would be the consequences.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So good.
Yeah. So, but I think I could have done better, but it was all right. It was a good start.
Will you share it again next month?
Probably not. Maybe next month could be, but probably I'll find something else. I will put it on the back burner and work on it again, and then.
Because you tend to share a new story every time, no?
Yes, but this year I'm recycling more of the stories I've already done.
Okay.
I did give myself a challenge last year to have a new story every month.
Yeah.
And that was a great challenge, quite tough. But of course, if you tell a story only once, it can only get that good. So,
you think it's really good? Because I was asking Ivan last time, how is it to share the same joke over and over again?
Yes.
So I'll ask the same with the story.
With the story as well, it does. I think with the story, it's a little bit different than jokes. Because you can find new jokes and new parts or new angles within the story. You can find something funny, something you didn't pay attention to.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of it is about listening and speaking to people afterwards as well.
Mm.
When people said, oh, I wanted to know more about this factor or that factor. That was fascinating, or this is fascinating. And you realize, oh, because in our minds, and I've learned this about stories, and it's also a big difficulty with storytelling is, what we think is important in the story is not what people are always interested
in.
And that's how stories can either quickly become very boring at the same time, because you're talking about some detail which you were really upset about, but it's probably just bureaucracy that you were struggling with, and it really doesn't matter to anybody else.
Yeah, it's true.
And of course, within your own life, there's certain things that you're used to and becomes normal for you.
Yeah.
And then once you tell the story, and if you don't see the people's reaction, it's like, oh, I didn't know you did that. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yeah.
So that really, to find those elements in the story is always fascinating, the things you've missed.
So you take the feedback from the audience into account.
Yes.
Into crafting the next version.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's with stories, you can also try it out with some people. And then try to, what I often try to do is I try to run through the story again. And then there's sometimes actual small elements in the story that you've simply forgotten. And it's like, oh, actually, that also happened on, that was the same day. Or, oh, yes, there's a little, another angle or something else that you just simply, a detail that you've forgotten. And that comes back to you. Yeah.
It's amazing, no?
Yeah.
It's crazy process.
Yeah. But it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And the more you do it, it gets easier in a way. But I think you put more pressure on yourself at the same time. It's like, okay, I need to get
nail
better.
It.
Yeah.
Do you ever get bored of your own stories?
To an extent, yes. When it comes to stories, I think I don't do it that much that it's completely boring. I think if I take a story on tour and I'd say tell the same story over and over again,
yeah,
it will become quite boring. I think with the stand-up comedy specifically, there's stories within that, and sometimes those could become boring because you've told them so many times. Mm-hmm. But there's an element that someone once said you should give it like a gift.
Yeah.
So even if it's a joke or a line or something that you've said it so many times,
yeah,
when you actually say it out to give it to the audience, you should give it as a gift. You should say, I have this really nice thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you would have a story or a joke that works in the beginning, everybody laughs, it's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
You try to make it a little bit better, you fine-tune it, and then at some point it's reliably, it works. You can say it every single time, you always get a good laugh, great response. But what happens is you kind of fall out of love with it.
Yeah.
And you become tired, and it's like, oh, I'm using this line again, and that's what's happening. And then, of course, at some point you just have to, like, I'm giving this as a gift. Mm-hmm. And really get that mindset, because you're tired of it, the audience hasn't heard it before. Give them that.
Yeah.
Give them that as like, oh, here I have this. I've worked this out. This is for you. And then, of course, I do think that at some point you should just say, I'm not going to use that for a
mm-hmm.
while. And just shelve it.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you find it again, it's beautiful again.
Yeah. It's a gift to you.
Yes. Then it's like, oh, forgot about that. That's
yeah.
amazing. Let me
yeah.
try it again. Let me use it again. Yes.
And with the stories you said, you're revisiting them. This year,
I'm revisiting
and
them.
How is it to have that year, maybe, gap?
Sometimes it's a little, you can pick up a few things. Sometimes I listen back to when I told the story before, and I personally think I've improved as a storyteller. When I listen back, it's like listening to someone struggling a little bit more. Sometimes when I listen back, I surprise myself thinking, oh, actually, I don't have anything of this, because I take notes on it, I write it down. But if I listen back to the recording, I'm like, oh, I actually added this line, this was a funny element. And that really helps, like, oh, I can put this together. But most of the time I feel like I'm not getting to the point quick enough, or sometimes when, especially with storytelling, when the topic is tough.
Mm-hmm. For you, or what is it? What does it mean?
It's a topic, and you almost anticipate an audience reaction that this could be a sensitive topic or something that people don't want to immediately hear, or you kind of, the first time or the first few times you tell it, you dance around the topic a lot.
Mm.
Of course, this more often than not, you don't think it's that serious. You say it out loud. And it comes across as absolutely terrible, you know, like it sounds like something horrible you said, because you didn't
yeah.
take the audience into consideration. But the same is when sometimes you're too nervous, so you dance around the topic.
Mm-hmm.
You don't actually say like, oh, I actually want to talk about this, but it's a sensitive topic. So, for example, in South Africa, when I grew up, it was very common, and even in school, for kids to get hidings. To be beaten if you did something wrong. And that was very normal and standard. But to tell that to a Basel audience
yeah.
or a Zurich audience, people are shocked.
Yeah.
People don't want to hear about
yeah.
that. I'm sure in South Africa you could talk about it
yeah.
in a very different way, because it's more common, or it was more common there. But here, people immediately pull back.
Mm.
And they're worried about it. So you already know, okay, if it's a topic about something like this,
yeah.
I really need to be careful on how to approach it. And then sometimes you make a bigger drama out of it than
mm-hmm.
it needs to be. And yeah, you learn, like, oh, okay, this topic, I need something before it, or this topic, I can actually just go into.
Yeah. And you know by trying it out.
Oh, yes. Trying and failing. That's the important part.
How do you manage the failing part if it's a night that where it doesn't work so well? How do you feel after, and what do you do?
In the beginning, it was really tough. Mm-hmm.
2019?
No, I mean, 2019. I started end of 2018, 2019, even later. I remember, this was probably in 2019, she was here, I think. A friend of mine from South Africa came to visit. There weren't a lot of shows in Basel at the time, so we went to Zurich, and I did a show there, an open mic. And I tried out a new bit of material, of course, and a new set. And by the end of the set, it went so badly. I came across as such a horrible person. And like my ideas didn't come around, no one was laughing. Really quiet. When I walked off stage, I could actually hear someone whispering to someone else, "That was embarrassing."
Oh my god. Yeah.
And I fixed it. I've revisited that material. I've managed to find the right angle, and that's the reliable material now. It took me a long time to figure out, okay, how do I get this idea across?
Yeah.
How do I bring it across? Why?
And you didn't get discouraged that night?
A little bit, sure, and it was quite embarrassing. I had my wife there and a friend all the way from South Africa, and they traveled all the way to Zurich, and then it was just terrible. So, of course, you get a bit discouraged, but I think there's just certain things you have a deep feeling that you know there's something funny or important about it, and that motivates you to keep digging. There's other things you try and you go like, okay, that didn't work, but I don't feel passionate enough about it, mm-hmm. so I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
It's not needed, yes.
Yeah. And you never thought, oh, I'm going to give up now?
Of course, that thought crossed your mind every now and then, and normally after a show that didn't go so well. I think if a show is really bad, you don't normally think of it like that. I think if a show is just mediocre, if it was just okay.
I think Ivan said the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's really bad. You feel motivated. It's like, okay, I need to be better at this. Mm-hmm. And when it's just okay, it's like, oh, it's okay. It's yeah.
It's worse.
It's worse, yeah.
And how did you actually... So you never thought about quitting. That was never an option.
Yeah. Yeah, like I did quit in the past.
Ah, you started before...
Yeah, I started originally when I was 17.
Ah, that's super, yeah. Super
and,
fun detail.
And in South Africa, and I kind of started by accident. I was working in an area, and there was an open mic that was organized there. And I met the host and the organizer, because I was working in a restaurant. He came in with a friend, and he said, someone else is going to come in later. As a joke, could you be really rude to them but super friendly to us? And I did it, and of course then afterwards we chatted and kept contact, and he convinced me to come and do... They ordered food and I delivered it during the show, and they convinced me to come on stage and tell a joke, and I did that. And then they invited me back the next week. They were very supportive. And I was, at that stage, I was too shy to do it as myself, so I had like a persona. Mm-hmm. And
do you remember what it was?
Oh yes, it was a Skivvy Stain, which is a porn star turned stand-up comedian.
In South Africa?
In South Africa. I had insane sort of porn star style outfits and... long hair and like a sleazy ponytail and massive glasses for the job. And I did that, and like within that period for about 2 years, and of course gigs were few and far between, and I was away in between, and for a couple of months, then coming back and then picking it up again. And at some point, I really try to give it a push for about 2-3 months of just focusing on comedy. And of course, 2-3 months is not enough to think, oh, I can, if I do it for a couple of months, I can make a living. And it's just, it's an impossible thing to think. You need years. And it's maybe a little bit overambitious. But I really enjoyed it back then. And then I quit when I was living in Ireland, because there I didn't have the, I couldn't find the hours. I couldn't afford to take time off work. Like financially, I just couldn't afford to do comedy. So I quit.
But you were thinking about it back then, or not at all?
About
doing it, but just it didn't work out?
Yes, so basically I was thinking about it and I realized I had to quit. And I kind of, I thought, okay, it's fine. It's something I tried, I can move on. I was also young at the time. I'm 19 years old. And this, the next thing is going to happen in life. But it kind of gnawed away at me for years and years and years. It's actually really funny. I bumped into a guy called John Flismas. He's a famous South African comedian. Also really good at tackling hard topics. And I bumped into him in 2010. We had a chat and we talked about the old times. I was like, yeah, I'm really thinking about getting back into it. And then it took another 8 years. And then I got back into it, yeah. But now I don't think I'll quit. It's kind of...
It's fascinating. Yeah. The break and then...
The starting again, yeah. I mean, like I said, I gave it a good go back then. I tried to organize an open mic. There I had a few nights. Of course, I organized an open mic in downtown Johannesburg, an area called Doornfontein. It's a predominantly black area as well, because at that time, most of the comedy happened in the white areas. This is the late 90s. So, yeah, there weren't a lot of black comedians. So I started actually going to poetry nights in like sort of predominantly black areas and clubs, and slowly building up, meeting people, trying to organize our own night. Did a lot of promotion for that, where I went to any sort of poetry night. A lot of times you just walk into a bar, ask them if you could promote it, get on the bar counter and give it a try. The confidence you have at like 17, 18 is insane. I gave it a good try, but and I was fascinated about it as well. I just, because you have all these other cultures and the country was in a unique state, and I did some stuff where I mixed in a bit of Zulu, and there was material that I also realized from doing the different venues that are clearly only going to work with a white audience or a predominantly black audience. It's just, it's two different worlds. And I also really enjoyed that part. It was like, oh, it's just opening up my horizons and everything. So that was great. Yeah.
And then Switzerland, and then you realize what works in the...
Yeah, like in Switzerland, because there was no comedy in Basel when I started, basically. It just didn't happen. You would have touring comedians coming maybe once every 4 or 5 months.
The open mic at Heimat, no?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the beginning, it was... So I thought, okay, I want to do comedy. There's an open stage at Parta. It's still there, Parta Music. Once a month, I'm not sure if they still do it, but they did it for many years. It was singer-songwriter stuff and performance art. So I knew if I had, because it was once a month on a Wednesday, I knew if I have those Wednesdays off, I can go do it. So I had to make sure that I have those Wednesdays off. It's like in the back of my head, and I was already kind of like getting into the sphere of comedy, listening to a lot of podcasts, watching a lot of comedy, thinking of ideas and concepts, and it's like, okay, fine, I try to book a night there. And when I finally tried to book it, they were fully booked for the next 2 months.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, okay, fine. But then at the same time, I was like, let me see if there's something happening in Zurich. And then they had shows up in Zurich, and I started going through to that. I think within a couple of months, they had one show in Basel. And then the guys from Zurich stopped doing shows in Basel at the time. but Marcus Sipola, he took over. And so in the beginning it was myself, Marcus Sipola, and Tom, really, and then Ferris. And yeah, slowly but surely, we tried to build the comedy scene in Basel. Mm-hmm. And only really 2020 got a big boost.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, when we started Murder Mondays, that was a big, that was a game changer, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. That changed a lot of things. With Vanessa to do the open mics was great. That brought in, that was also really nice to have that opportunity to do it there. She, for her, it was difficult. She always had to travel quite far to come and do it here. You need to have good reasons and returns to keep doing that.
Yeah. And then the Beast.
And then the Beast, yeah.
Where we are recording right now.
Yes. It's lovely. I'm really happy we got this space. I think we got really lucky. Sometimes you feel like it's just happened, but then you forget that actually it took ages for me looking at a lot of different venues, talking about it for a very long time, thinking, okay, I really need to be proactive and see what options are available. Thinking originally I didn't think I could set it up the way I did.
Yeah.
I thought I would need more money. Mm-hmm. I was also talking about people willing to fund it and thinking, okay, if I get the right space and I can apply for it, I approached the Cultural Bureau of Basel, approached a few other people. I also approached Basel City Immobilia and asked them if they could, you know, be supportive and, you know, maybe they, because they own a lot of properties around the city, they know a lot of spaces, maybe they would have, but they're not in the business of helping people with that. I reached out to a lot of breweries, the local breweries, Willy and Hunze, for sponsorship. It's the big problem is people don't know comedy, so they don't understand it, so they're very skeptical, like, oh, what are you talking about?
Yeah. What is that?
Yes. And luckily, because I spoke to everybody that I saw, I was telling them, I'm looking for a venue in the city. And that's how I found this place, because I've told someone about it. They overheard someone else saying, there's this cooking club that needs a space and that wants people to rent it. And they want to meet. And I came to meet them. I was skeptical.
Mm.
Yes, because I didn't think that we could find such a nice space for such a good price and have such a... The relationship we have with the cooking club is amazing. Mm-hmm. They're really supportive and helpful from the beginning. Yeah, I didn't think that would be possible. Mm-hmm. I was too skeptical. I was thinking, something that's used as a clicker keller. Those spaces are amazing. Myself and Teddy used to talk about it in dreams, like, oh, a clicker keller would be perfect.
Yeah,
but never, never. It will never happen. You can forget about it. And we were close to signing a contract at another venue. In retrospect, I'm so happy we found this one. There would have been a lot of pressure, financial pressure. It would have been a big push.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm really happy we found the Beast.
What? Because it's not the same, right, to perform and to organize shows and then, I guess, to own kind of a venue.
Yeah.
So what made you want to create that?
I think it's the same reason why you have the podcast, because someone has to do it, so. Someone has to do it, you know, like, I mean, talking about opening up a comedy club within the Swiss or comedy scene has been something people have been talking about forever, you know, that would be perfect. That would be perfect.
Yeah.
But you had to, and at some point, somebody just has to do it. And I just think, okay, I'm quite pleasantly surprised that I have a lot of skills that I've accumulated over my life that are helpful with this. So there's a lot of things I can do, and I think, okay, oh, I can do that myself. I can fix this. I can do this.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the place was, you know, the sound system I installed myself, lights, the stage, we built.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I, we did the whole back curtain as well ourselves. So all these little bits and pieces And yeah, I think that helps, that you could say, okay, I have those skills, and it's like a nice surprise, like, oh, I can do that.
And then the whole marketing.
That's my Achilles heel. The marketing of it, there's some things, of course, I'm still learning in that. I think we picked the right model for this club. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we don't charge the artists, so that they actually have an opportunity to take the risk to come to Basel, because it is a financial risk for most people to come to Basel. I mean, Switzerland, if you just think of like where you're going to stay for a night, you know, just the cost of transport, travel. The train tickets. And if you don't have a Halbtag, I mean, it's really expensive to go Zurich and back. It's, for most people, it's like, what? That's how much you pay. And so for people, it's a risk. So if we don't charge them, they can we reduce their risk value. So they don't want to lose money. But then the marketing is on them. So most artists, and they organize their own. Of course, I also organize a bunch of shows here. And I need to improve on my marketing on that, of course. I'm quite happy, but I'm happy about is because there's a belief I have, I guess, that there's something really lovely about just comedy. Is like people come out and they open up. And I mean, in today's world, that if you walk around the streets and you just have a normal day going in the tram, or even not taking the tram, just moving up and down, everybody's closed off from everybody else these days. It's you seldom, I mean, I often have days where I try deliberately to look at people and just smile and see how many smiles I get back or the reactions. And it's beautiful, but I have to consciously remind myself, because it's not part of society anymore.
Or do you find, especially in this country, or because you've...
Yeah, okay. More so, I mean, if I go to South Africa, if I can use that as a comparison, in South Africa, people are up for playing. They're ready to play in a way. So if you go to the supermarket, you can easily have a quick interaction and a joke and a smile with someone. That's just, I think, culturally a difference. In the UK, you're more likely to be approached at a bar. People come up and, you know, say hi and, you know, ask you about something.
I wonder if it's the English language also, because I've lived in Canada and Australia and it was the same.
Okay.
You know? So they come to you and they talk.
It could be. I don't know. It could be. Although, I mean, I was in Guatemala recently, and they are also quite reserved, the same as the Swiss. Mm-hmm. Sure, when they have their parties, they're louder and they do their thing and they play their... Mm-hmm. reggaeton to whatever volume, and you know, there's other elements that are more social, but just the general, like, people don't approach each other in general. And I think comedy and coming to watch live comedy gives people the space to like kind of break down the boundaries and to have those social interactions. And I think that we're a Verein, it makes it even, like, it's like a next level. It's super, people feel part of a group and a family and included. And I like the idea that, you know, that people can just have some places an option. Like, if you're thinking, what are we going to do Friday night? It's like, oh, there's a show on probably. Let's go check. Let's go watch what's on. And or on the Saturday, or I have a friend coming into town. I'm going to show them Basel. What are we going to do in the evening? It's like, oh, you can go to a comedy show. And I really feel like people should feel welcome here all the time. And that's the kind of environment we have here. I think maybe that's my marketing strategy, is just to make space that people are really, you know, happy to come to. And then, the rest will grow. The community will prosper, hopefully.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were discussing with between some comedians about the use of social media and the... making videos and cutting clips and talking to the camera and you know, and for me all of those things sounds like a lot of work. And I was joking, I said I'd rather spend all my time, effort and money and open up a comedy bar. But in a nutshell, I guess that's it, because it's something I still need to do. I need to cut some clips and I need to post them online. I don't have a lot.
Because you film every time, no?
Most times I film. Most of the time the quality is not always the best. But I have enough good quality clips that I need to sit down and edit and put them out. But
so let's. Do you want to ask if maybe somebody listens to this right now and say if you are a videographer or a social media expert, both ideally?
Yeah, ideally, yes.
Thing, maybe they can reach out.
Oh yes, they can definitely reach out. I mean, I am I'm also not alone here. I bet you can easily get enough comedians that would be willing to say like, oh, if someone could just find and edit it. Of course, I think there's an element of it. I mean, like, it's not just the first time I've talked or thought about the life of Instagram. There is an element of it where I've seen the way people do it. I think people who find the joy in doing it, there's something about that authenticity and that you can tell. And I mean, I just need to figure out where I can find the joy.
I need to find the joy
in doing it. If someone named Joy is out there and is into this, that would be fantastic.
No, but it is hard because when you do something creative and then you do everything around it. You're producing the show. It's not the same job. And what you did at the beginning was tell jokes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's hard.
It is hard. It is hard. I think we're living in this world where. Unfortunately, all of us have to now become our own little capitalists and marketing experts, and everybody has to, no matter what field you're in. You know, you could be a poet, but you know, like, how many followers do you have? Yeah. You know, that's the question. And it kind of sucks. It kind of sucks. But of course, on the other hand, I mean, I live in Basel. I do comedy in English. If we didn't hustle, if we didn't open up a comedy bar and already for years do comedy nights in different venues and build up a comedy scene and run workshops and do all these things, I could not do comedy in Boston. It didn't exist before, you know. And now I'm lucky enough, and with any luck I can, you know, start promoting myself more and more and more, and I can actually have a career as a comedian without being signed by the biggest record, you know, not record, but agency, so that helps.
Yeah, so it gives you some freedom.
It gives you some freedom, at a cost.
I know, because I used to teach yoga and I do my own things also, and advertising is not my forte either.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I have inspiration today, let me just post today. And it doesn't work like that. You have to really post all the time.
Yeah.
Something that people will want to watch.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, even that's also the crazy thing. You're a yoga teacher. There's no logical reason why you also need to worry about Instagram.
When I started teaching yoga, I don't teach that much. I don't teach really anymore.
Yeah.
I do more coaching and hypnotherapy.
Okay.
But at the beginning, Instagram was not a thing. It was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was not a thing. And now I see a lot of teachers who post the best content, but then when they're in front of me and they teach a class, they suck, you know? Because that's not what they practiced. They practiced their splits in front of the phone.
Yes.
And not teaching. So, and they then... And sometimes I see, so this is a bit off topic, but sometimes I see people in class and I'm like, I want to help them because they're doing something, they're going to hurt themselves.
Yeah. You know,
and the teacher is like going, like continuing with their class. And so that's why I say, I see it in every field. It's a craft, you learn a craft, and then you need to learn also everything around it.
And
but first you need to learn the craft.
Yes, I think that's an important factor. You see it a lot with comedy that a lot of people post. That I think is a little bit of a trap for me, because a lot of people start posting things early.
Mm.
And I didn't want to post anything on the internet until I thought I have something that's good enough. And yeah, now I'm on the point is like, okay, I think I'm good enough for the internet, but I didn't do all the work before. So I have like a disadvantage. Yeah. If I started earlier, and just, because I mean, I should see it like open mic comedy, where you go on the first time and you post something where you put your heart and soul into, and you get zero likes, like the no laughter, and maybe someone sees it and shows someone else and go like, this is embarrassing. But just get over that and just go on to the next thing. I think that's something that should happen, but yeah.
I mean, you know, if you really don't like it, it's also perfect, I think. You bring people together.
Yeah. And I think
in real life,
and that's also an element of comedy I really enjoy, is the real life element. And of course, with the amount of clips online, it also, for some things, it spoils it. Because I don't know if you've seen a lot of crowd work clips.
Yeah, a lot. I watch a lot of that.
Yeah, and then of course, it's not always done in good humor and good taste. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, sometimes I see a crowd with clip, it's like, I would never want to go to a comedy show after I saw that. I was like, that sounds horrible. And I think there's a little bit of harm and good within that, so, yeah.
But I'm sure you could post your stuff.
Yeah, I should post some more, yes. Now, I've been thinking about a lot the last month or so, that I really need to get down and just get some organization. So I should make it easy for myself, and that will bring more joy. I also want to have clear rules, because I know how easy it is to become a slave to a post. You post something and you want to check it again. What happened to it? Did something happen? I kind of just want to throw it in the river and not care where it floats to. And
you're probably not a lot on your phone for yourself, no? You're probably not the type who scrolls
endlessly. No, I'm not. Yeah. I often get stuck on Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's good.
I get stuck in Wikipedia holes. That happens. I do listen to a lot of comedy.
But not on Insta.
Not on Insta, no. I never got into it. I use, I like to watch rugby highlights, and that I often get on Facebook Reels. It's kind of the same thing. But my Facebook and Insta are not friends yet, so I like that there's a bit of a... They somehow didn't figure out.
Didn't connect.
Connect.
The update was
Yeah.
Where do you watch the comedy?
Comedy, I try to watch full specials on YouTube, and then I normally want a bigger screen. I don't want to see it on my phone. I want to see what's going on. YouTube's got quite a lot, and often some new comedy specials come out, and I try to find... some new specials. It's interesting always to see what people bring out, to see what's happening. I think there's definitely been a change in the whole world of it, where it used to be everybody wants to get onto Netflix, and those deals sounded amazing, and I mean, at the end of the day, you're hoping for ticket sales, but with the amount of comedy they put on Netflix, it doesn't mean people find you easily. If you're not ranking, and then you back again to an algorithm, so you might as well put it on YouTube. So more people's doing that, so that's also quite interesting to see.
I also see Netflix like the thing, you know, the thing you need to reach.
Yes,
but speaking about that, do you have a specific goal like that for your comedy career?
I don't have really long-term ambitions, I would say. I think that's a problem I have with my 17-year gap, is I don't have the same ambition as a lot of other people. I think I had it more when I did it the first time. I was like, oh, I want this to be like... I really don't have... I would love to make a comfortable living off it. That would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
For comedy itself, I've done... Like, I have two good enough hours... that I want to record. I want to sort of fine-tune them and practice them a bit more. Of course, this year is not the best because I started a comedy club. So, but yeah, I have those, and I kind of want to do that and then move on to newer material and mm-hmm. something different. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Do you already know which direction?
Yes, I kind of have already a few jokes within that field. I really want to talk about generally toxic masculinity and being, and in the same voice also talk about more positive angles on feminism, and also like kind of I'm really fascinated about menopause. Mm-hmm. And it sounds bizarre, and I'm really not the right person to talk about it, but again, somebody should. And I really want to do some, I want to explore some interesting material within that.
Okay.
And also just to see, because it's a bizarre, I think it's a bit of a bizarre topic, and I think we have a lot of old stereotypes within our heads and within society, and the way people are, women are treated in society is just way off. It should change. And there's, I know I'm not the first guy to say anything about this, but I do feel I have an interesting angle on it, and of course, filled with animal facts. That's the angle.
Cool.
That's the angle. Yes.
Would you say you have a style, or do you play a character?
I wouldn't say I play a character on stage. No, I think style-wise, I think it's, for me, it's quite hard to define. I've actually asked a few people about it, because it's nice to hear, it's easier to hear an outside voice to say it's like this or like that. But I don't really know, to be honest. I think I like, of course, there's a strong element of storytelling within it. I think storytelling is sure part of the style. But at the same time, yeah, I don't think I have a specific angle. I do talk about animals a lot.
Yeah.
That's surely a factor in it. And I think there's a lot of fact-based humor. I guess that would be the easiest thing to say. I always try to find something that's true and interesting, and then build off that. I think that's it's like a general, yeah.
And also your everyday life.
Yes, of course.
People in your everyday life.
Yeah.
Your wife.
Yes, my wife features in quite a lot of my comedy. She's been super supportive as well with comedy and the club. I mean, she helped physically to do a lot of these things.
Shout out.
Yeah, and she, it's quite funny because often she would say she feels guilty because she doesn't come to enough comedy nights. And I always tell her it's absolutely ridiculous. There's the amount of support she's giving, the amount of help she puts out. I mean, it's difficult when your partner starts doing comedy.
Yeah.
They're not there most nights.
Yeah.
You know. They invest all their time. They constantly think of jokes. They constantly want to tell you something that they think is funny. They have a bizarre sense of humor. You've got to listen to it again, you know, because they think, no, it's different this time. So it's really not an easy task. Of course, as I've seen as well, comedy often leads to divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah, or separation, or couples split up. It's tough. You're going to listen to this person all the time talking the same nonsense over and over again. Come on, it's terrible.
That's what marriage is about anyway.
I guess. But she's been super supportive, very helpful. Also, a good person to actually try out jokes on. Because she's got a brutal honesty, mm-hmm. for starters. And she can... she has a clear way of kind of perceiving it, and she sees things that I wouldn't.
Yeah.
So that's also quite helpful. So it's a real, real good person. Just been super supportive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Do you want to share really briefly? I know you share about it on stage, but maybe how did you come here?
To Switzerland.
Meet her, maybe.
Meeting her, that's a long story. Very interesting one. You should save it for another storytelling night. That's actually a great story for that. A lot of intricacies and faults. I should get her on stage to come and do the story together. Because then I tell my part and she tells her part and it goes back and forth. I think that would be beautiful. Long story short, we had a long distance relationship. I tried to come to Switzerland.
You met her in South Africa?
In South Africa years before. Didn't see her for about 2 years. Because we became friends in South Africa and didn't see her for about 2 years. Mm. And then we got in touch again, and I was living in Scotland at the time. She was living here, so we had a long distance relationship for the beginning. And my visa ran out in Scotland, so I thought, okay, I'll apply for work here in Switzerland. I came to Basel, applied for work, found a job, went back to South Africa because that's the way you have to apply for a visa. The work was actually applying for my visa, and took six or 7 months for the application. Should have taken 2. And of course, luckily the people were supportive and they kept on pushing it. And then after 6 or 7 months, it was declined.
Oh, wow.
And she then decided, okay, she's going to come to South Africa. And then once we were there, we got married in South Africa. And then we came back to Switzerland later on. And yeah, that's how I ended up here. And I must say, it was a bit of a touch and go. I mean, for South Africans, the weather is normally something that's a big issue. But I did live in Scotland and Ireland before, and Basel's much better than that. And I do enjoy the city a lot. I really do. And it's, of course, we lived in Cape Town before Basel, and Cape Town's amazing. There's also a lot to do, and you have the beach and the mountain, and you know, nice atmosphere and our group of friends, and it's a great lifestyle. And it was a bit of a shock to come to Basel, but I find Basel's a really interesting city. And one thing I realized when I moved to Basel that I didn't realize in other places, you really have to go find the fun.
That's why you created a comedy club.
Kind of, yeah, but I mean, even for live music, there's amazing live music in Basel, but you've got to go out, you've got to put in the effort, and you've got to go and say, what's up here? What's there? What exhibitions are on? There's a lot happening in the city, but you've got to put in the effort. I find it funny when I speak to expats who move to Basel, and they go, or generally, oh, it's so boring. It's like, how can you be bored in Basel? It's like, I don't have enough time to get around to all the things I want to do.
It's more hidden. Maybe.
Yeah, it's a little bit hidden, but it's there. Do you know about the water fight, the Wasserschlacht? I've taken part of it many years, and I just saw like it's happening again. It's on the 9th. I think it's Saturday.
Yeah,
it's Saturday. It's a huge fight between Groß Basel and Klein Basel on the Dreirosenbrück.
And on the bridge.
On the bridge. So you have two armies assembled. With water pistols, water balloons, they have trumpets and drums, and they basically storm each other. And the fight pushes each side until the one who conquers the bridge wins. And it goes on for about 40, 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
The biggest problem is running out of water. And I've done that a few years, and it's so much fun. It's a crazy idea, and it happens in the city, and most people have never heard of it.
Yeah, I never heard of it.
It is so much fun.
It would make sense that it's between Klein Basel and Groß Basel.
Yeah, exactly.
which side are you?
I'm in the Klein Basel side, yeah. Although the Beast is in Groß Basel, I could affiliate with the other side.
This year
I could swap sides, yes. Yeah. But it's just a beautiful thing that happens.
And yeah, one of the things only here, probably.
You gotta go find the fun. Yeah.
And then there's comedy at the Beast.
Comedy at the Beast, there's lots happening at the moment. Of course, July and August, a bit quieter.
Yeah.
But really excited about the program we have coming up. Mm. So we've booked quite a lot until the end of the year. We've got some big names coming through. We've got some interesting acts coming through. Yes, a variety of people. And I like that as well. Mm. And I'm excited. It seems like it's got some nice momentum. And I mean, it's, we started in February, and to start in February without too many bookings, I mean, it was a slow build up, but now it's got some nice momentum to it, and I'm looking forward to what's going to happen. Yeah.
And the workshops also?
We got two workshops coming up in September. We have the stand-up comedy workshop. That's the first weekend in September. Mm-hmm. So it's just the Saturday and the Sunday. Mm-hmm. And you can find out on the website, thebeastbasel.com. I'm sure you'll put it in the notes. That's the stand-up workshop between myself and Teddy. Mm-hmm. Doing that, we will have a lot of different elements. But it's kind of like, if you're thinking about doing comedy, that's a good workshop to join. And I also think it's a great workshop for people who've done comedy now for a little bit, like tip their toe into it, if you want to put it that way, and to really go through quite a lot, because there's a lot you can learn. And then we have the storytelling workshop. This is the second run of that. I'm really excited about that. And that's for every Thursday in September. Mm. For 2 hours, we've got two teachers for that, with slightly different styles.
Yes.
And I think that's
it's great.
That's a great workshop, and that's magic. I must say that the last workshop was so beautiful and so nice to see what comes out of that, and how it helps people and how it changes things, and how storytelling really connects people. Mm. That was really magic about that, and I'm looking forward to the next one. Yes,
yeah.
It's going to be great fun.
I will check those September dates for the stand-up.
Yes. yeah, you should definitely...
No, it really, I want to say, like, if anybody's thinking about doing it, it really helps, or maybe for you as a feedback as well, to have this course, you know, to be like, okay, I took it, or for my kind of personality, okay, I took a course, now I can go do it.
Yes. No, that's the idea. And when we started the Murder Mondays nights, myself and Teddy, we offered free workshops before each show.
Okay.
And in the beginning, of course, we didn't know that much about giving workshops on stand-up comedy. We just know what we've learned ourselves and heard of, you know. So we had a lot of the theory, but knowledge, but didn't know how to give the courses. But we did that, and that really helped build up the scene. So in the beginning, it was just one or another person. You'd ask him, "What jokes are you thinking about?"
Yeah.
And
then
you'll just talk through it, and say, like, "Don't say it like that. You should rather say it like that." Very simple stuff. And this build up. And then at some point it was really running well. We had it every Monday, the workshops, and repeat people coming back for it. It's also, we've been doing it so long, it's a lot of effort to put in, and you don't always get the reward.
Yeah.
But we think it's much better, because now we can actually have a clear structure. We know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We've done this long enough. We know how to help people. We know what pushes people and helps them and gets them ready, and I think we can really get a good workshop, and we're going to try to compress as much of it into a weekend. So it's not the ideal case. I mean, it's not like you're going to go pro next month, but it's a great way to get you onto the stage, and it's a great way, if you're already doing comedy, to start to think about your jokes and what's around it. So I think it's important. You can always learn something. We try to get enough people. We got some clowning workshops coming up as well. And we've gotten a few people in from abroad to come and do workshops here. And those are fascinating, because you can actually, you learn so much. And I mean, I will go to all these workshops myself, because I want to know, I want to find out, I want to keep improving and learning. And it's amazing to have that opportunity to get the people to come and teach you something.
Yeah.
And comedy world is, luckily, they're very helpful in that way. People want to support.
They want to help, yeah.
They want to support. I think maybe, of course, like most things, I think Switzerland is in a bubble with comedy as well.
Do you think people are more supportive here?
The comedians themselves, I think, yeah. The audience, I wouldn't say. People in Switzerland don't laugh at this, even if you're no matter where you're from, it's just the Swiss audience, like there's the Basel or the Zurich or whatever audience, they're more reluctant to laugh. If you go, it's like practicing with weights on. If you go somewhere else and people laugh, it's like, oh wow, it's amazing.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, it's just strange to experience that. But at the same time, the comedians in them and the people are quite supportive. And I think especially in Basel, people are really nice and supportive, and we're rooting for each other to get better. And I think that's a really nice factor. Mm-hmm. People want the other people to succeed as much as...
That's what Ivan was talking about, a lot about it on the podcast, that he really liked the community here.
Yeah.
And it made everything, the community.
Yeah.
And I really like the storytelling community as well.
Yeah. And
it was beautiful.
Yeah. I'm excited about it because it's growing now. And it's also just nice to see, of course, I didn't see a lot of the same faces last night as the other months, but I know a lot of people are just not here at the moment.
Yeah.
It's beginning of August, of course, and they will be back in September, and I really think it's something that can grow and prosper nicely. And I mean, I've done it now at a lot of other venues for a while, and I think in the Beast it's found a home. It's found a real, like, people are like, oh okay, this is something really nice, and I'm excited about that. Once a month I think is a good number, and I'm looking forward to see where it goes and grows.
Me too. Anything else you want to add about the Beast or
no else? Just check out the website. I guess that's the best thing to do. I can find out more about what we're doing. We have, like I say, amazing acts coming through. And join the club, become part of the community.
Yeah.
Come out, enjoy live comedy, have your phone away from you for 2 hours. You know, you don't look at it at least 2 hours a night. And in between, you chat to people, you know, like you meet new people. It's a great atmosphere, it's a great vibe. I really think people should come and do it. And it's important to laugh, of course, yes. We can't all be serious.
Yeah. Thank you, Albert.
Thank you very much.